Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
I'm Tom McGovern, host of Faith Matters, and it's my delight this Sunday afternoon to welcome back Dr. Elisa Wong to the program. Elisa is the interim dean of the Honors College at Texas Tech University. Elisa, it's wonderful to see you again.
This is one of my favorite things to do because it's basically hanging out with one of my favorite people in Lubbock. So,
how nice of you, Elisa. Just a little of your history. Tell us who you are.
My name is Elisa Wong, and as you said, I'm the interim dean of the Honors College, and I'm a professor in the Honors College and the Department of History. I am trained as a modern Italian historian, and one of my favorite things that I get to do is to work with students, work with staff, and work with faculty, and help make this community a better place for everyone.
You are also that wonderful book of the Texas Liberators. Before we came on air, we were remembering Dr. Ted Hartman and that wonderful evening when we had some of the Liberators here in Lubbock, and you hosted a wonderful, wonderful program honoring these men who had been part of the liberation of the people in the concentration camps in 1945.
I have been very, very fortunate to work with the Texas Holocaust and Genocide Commission on two projects, that Texas Liberator Project, which allowed these World War II veterans to come back as witnesses to the liberation of the concentration camps and as witnesses to the Holocaust. And then on a documentary film with Paul Hunton, Narratives of Modern Genocide, that will start touring. We were limited because of COVID. That will start touring next fall. So that speaks to survivors of modern genocide.
We look forward again to having you back to talk about the documentary, and I'm sure it will be airing on Channel 5.
Absolutely. And it would be wonderful to have Ambassador Sechan Siv and Gilbert Tubanyahe, who are the two protagonists of the film, to speak with you as well.
Honors College in the time of COVID. Like everybody else, you've been doing virtual Zoom teaching. How has that been for you?
The Honors College did kind of hybrid teaching. So we did some work where we bought chairs. We could sit outside in the lawn in front of the Honors College. And other moments, we taught behind the screen on Teams or on Blackboard or on Zoom, like most of the nation did, like most of the world did. It changed our mindset about things. And it changed the ways in which we had to understand human interaction and appreciate human contact. It really did shift things for us because it was no longer just about education. It was about comfort and support and sustenance through one of the most difficult periods in the last century.
What do you see in terms of educating people with that type of vision, that type of openness to the entirety of the human experience?
I'm so privileged and I'm so honored to work with students who really are the ones teaching me. We always say that we're the teachers of the students, but in fact, it's the students who inspire us and who really help us to understand our purpose and our mission on this earth. Even though I'm the one with the titles and the degrees, I should actually be paying my students because they're the ones who remind me of how fortunate I am and of how much I still have to learn. For me in the Honors College during this global pandemic, it has been an amazing thing to see that our students, the majority of whom are STEM majors, who are pre-med majors or engineering majors, really embrace the work of storytelling, the work of narrative, the work of art, and the work of community. They were, when West Texas came calling because we did not have PPE during the height of COVID-19, they were the ones who came with me in the Honors College 3 times a week, masks on, 6 feet apart, to build 20,000 face shields that we ship from El Paso to Wichita Falls to the Navajo Nation.
How will this story of humankind as it unfolds in COVID times, how do you think it's going to find expression in the arts, in music, in poetry, in history, in narrative?
A lot of the educators really came up with some creative assignments for our students. They modified their teaching. So perhaps instead of a research paper, they kept a journal, or they wrote tone poems, or they recorded, you know, Zoom meetings, you know, with their grandparents or with their parents. We still on Texas Tech campus watched as the red tulips bloomed. And so it was a reminder to us that even though the world may have stopped in some senses, nature went on, art went on, storytelling went on, and the need for human connection.
Of course, connection, 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 relationship. That's who you are. That's who you are as a person. That's who you are as a scholar. to promote human connection, especially from your perspective, expressions of compassion that you've seen.
When Texas Tech opened up their COVID clinic, Meredith Imes, who was running the vaccine clinic, actually wrote to the Honors College and asked for volunteers. They needed people to help staff the vaccine clinic. So we sent out an all call to the Honors College. Within the first 2 minutes, we had 50 students sign up. Within the first 10 minutes, I had 200 students sign up. And by the end of the third hour, I had 500 students signing up. That's one third of the Honors College that had volunteered to help in some way keep our community safe. That's the expression of human kindness and of human understanding of responsibility to our community.
Expressions of the common good, nurturing the common good, is something that I have seen. Have you seen that in action too?
Absolutely. I mean, so even for instance, when the COVID clinic opened up in Lubbock, I had students who were reaching out to their older professors, to the older members of the community, because they knew it was going to be difficult to navigate that website. And so they were signing these people up. They were signing their professors, their friends, their neighbors up for COVID vaccines. They were checking in on their neighbors. So many of my students volunteered for Meals on Wheels. They volunteered even to sit outside masks on 6 feet apart, just to tell stories, to ask how people's days were. And I think that if anything, despite the fact that we had to build the technology and work on the technology to keep us safe behind a screen, more than ever, we were together in all the ways that counted.
Of course, I think of some of the students that called Tony and I to see if we needed anything, if we needed food, or if we needed, some of them brought by dinner for us. And then I was so touched by Dr. Chris Smith, our mutual wonderful friend from the vernacular and from the music. He played in the neighborhood with Angela Mariani, his wife. And it's kind of that the music of the soul going forth, bringing us together in the midst of our struggles.
Absolutely. And our souls still continue to sing to one another, even when we're divided by a global pandemic.
At this point, Lisa, we'll take a break and then we'll be back to continue this wonderful conversation. Thank you.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. If you're joining us late, our guest this is Sunday afternoon is delightful, Dr. Elisa Wong. Elisa is the interim dean of the Honors College at Texas Tech University. What responsibility do we have to the world community in terms of our response to the COVID? What do we need to be doing for other countries? The Honors College certainly promotes a very national and international perspective.
I was talking about our face shield building operation, and with the College of Engineering and the School of Medicine and the Honors College and so many other colleges on campus, we built 20,000 face shields and 10,000 ear guards and 300 intubation chambers, and we're still continuing that work. And we're looking into trying to send some of those face shields and some of that PPE to India, if possible, to our friends and colleagues. So that we recognize that even though we have a glorious sunny day today here, that there is still devastation, there is still tragedy, and there's still thunderstorms on the horizon if we do not take care of one another. To me, there is a philosophical question. There's an ethical question of how responsible we are to one another as global citizens, as members of this earth. It's just a matter of practical considerations as well. If we do not get vaccines, if we do not get the virus under control in Brazil, in Mexico, in India, in Sri Lanka, the variants will rise. And our vaccine protections for now will have to be supplemented. It is not a protect us only scenario. It is actually a protect everyone, because in order for us to get this virus under control, all of us have to move simultaneously. All of us have to move together.
I was delighted a couple of weeks ago on Channel 5 television station on what smallpox taught us. And I was so impressed in the 50s, at the height of the Cold War, it was a Russian diplomat that proposed to a committee of the United Nations that we should address smallpox, not just as individual, but as a worldwide area of suffering and of disease. And what resulted from that was absolutely amazing.
The scientific innovation, right, the technology that came forth from scientists working together in order to solve this problem. Part of what we've discovered with COVID-19 is that it is not just about the science. It's not just about, you know, vaccine development, but it's also about communication. It's about the humanist. It's about the ethicist. It's about asking questions. once we have developed the vaccine, once we have done this ethically, once we have recognized the people who have given of themselves or been sacrificed for medical research, what that means, some of them willingly, some of them unwillingly, what that means for us. We also have to talk about, well, what does it mean to communicate the importance of that science? Because even with the smallpox vaccine, they developed the technology. How do we get people to actually go and take the vaccine? How do we get them to trust it? And what we learn is that it's not just about the science. It's about socioeconomics. It's about class. It's about race and ethnicity and gender and sexuality. And it's about the developed world versus the developing world. It's about access. It's about opportunity. And so while the science is very important, without the conversation about ethics, about arts, about the humanities, we have the technology without the application.
Technology is good in itself, but does it apply to the human condition along the lines that you're so elegantly suggesting? You and I could talk all day, but you have a very important new assignment. You're one of the co-directors, co-chairs, co-whatever, of the upcoming 100-year history of our beloved Texas Tech.
Yes, I am very fortunate that the president of Texas Tech, Lawrence Skivenek, invited Grace Hernandez, the chief of staff of the president's office, and I to be co-chairs of the Centennial Committee. And so we're very much looking forward to celebrating the 100th birthday of Texas Tech on February 10th, 2023. And so it's just every time Grace and I talk, we get more and more nervous because I'm like just a year and a half left. And so, yes, we are in preparation for how we celebrate, how we include everyone, and how we tell the story of this great university of ours.
Looking out from our windows here, you know, we can see the wonderful campus unfolding before our eyes in all of its glory. You know, I remember when I came here in 1962, it was a very small place. It had the magnificent heart and soul and spirit that it still possesses. But what a wonderful opportunity for you to do this.
It is an absolute privilege. And so I get to now flip the microphone on you. So I am now Alisa Wong playing the role of Tom McGovern. And so I'm going to interview Tom McGovern, because he was here the past 60 years, and so for more than half of the history of Texas Tech. So when you arrived from Ireland in the 1960s, what did you see? What did you feel? What did you smell when you were in Lubbock?
I came in 1962, and quite frankly, when I first arrived here, I arrived here in January, and it's not exactly verdant green in January. And as I flew in here, my goodness, I said, I've landed on the moon. Then, of course, I was at Christ the King. Quickly became associated with the school, and then very, very quickly became associated with the university. I've got 3 degrees from Tech. I've got my bachelor's in history and English, my master's in history and English, and then my doctorate in educational psychology. You know, in the old Latin, alma mater, which is beloved mother, beloved. Texas Tech, the Texas Tech community, and the Texas Tech University, especially Texas Tech Technological College, as it was in those days, it has been my kindly mother, my kindly nurture, my kindly mentor, and I love it and treasure it.
So like Chancellor Emeritus Kent Hant says, you love Texas Tech. You love Texas Tech so much, you bleed red and black.
Absolutely. And my first classes then, of course, were in history and in English. Dr. Kennedy, Save Kennedy, he was one of the original deans. When I went through the seminary in Ireland, we didn't have a formal university system, but I had 6 years of instruction in the humanities, philosophy, theology, and associated areas, but nothing to prove it. He helped me devise, which I sent back to the rector, to the president of our seminary, something which would describe my academic area that would be recognizable to the people here, and then was adopted into the university as a senior. And then eventually got my bachelor's.
You are so smart, they promoted you right away, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely.
But I think that that's something special about Texas Tech, right, is in every story that you hear about the students' relationships with their professors, with their faculty, is that the faculty go out of their way to find a way to help, to listen to the story, and to understand the individual who is standing in front of them. You know, Ginger Carrick, one of our regents, talks about her relationship with a physics professor who saw her and helped her understand that she could be a physicist.
I just love what that woman does and how she promotes women in science. Oh,
absolutely.
My gosh, she's a champion.
She really is. You have been a champion, too.
Oh, thank you.
And you have always stood for the Lubbock community and this idea of inclusivity and belonging and faith.
Now I'm going to usurp your position as the host and say, at this point, we're going to take a short break. And will we continue to do what?
We will continue to talk after the break.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. This is Alisa Wong with Tom McGovern, and I have flipped the microphone on our wonderful host, and he is going to be the one being interviewed now. And so, as I was saying before the break, Tom McGovern has been a champion of Texas Tech and the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center School of Medicine for decades now. And when you arrived in 1962 in Lubbock, we are at the beginning of the civil rights movement. We are talking about human rights. We are talking about the protection of Black people in the United States. We are talking about equality, equity, voice, democracy. What did you see when you arrived here? What was happening on campus during that time?
It was very separated campus. We had T.J. Patterson on this show. The sitting president at that time would not see him in his office. He wouldn't even see him. He had to come down, had to meet him downstairs. And TJ has narrated that story to us and in a wonderful book. That was representative. I also remember, which I was very, very troubled by, the tremendous inequalities, inequities in healthcare. People of color didn't have access. And then, you know, there was a voice, the voice of the Latino and the African-American, the Black community in Lubbock, found expression in through protests, through the many initiatives to promote equality, which I was honored to be part of.
And Texas Tech started to open its doors to more and more students and really begin talking about not only accepting students, but also exploring the history of those students. Because I think that hand in hand, you and I have talked about this, it's not just about letting people in the doors, it's about celebrating their history.
The history department, which was my salvation, and the English department in those days, all housed in the, which we now describe as the administration building that, you know, graces our campus right in the middle. But all of the philosophy, all of the humanities, apart from the engineering and the library, were all housed there. Again, there was a really strong voice from the campus in terms of addressing, from an academic perspective, the inequalities which existed, racial to begin with, in that respect.
So Texas Tech is now a Research One Division One school, which means that we have some of the best scientists, humanists, engineers, mathematicians, dancers, artists that stand shoulder to shoulder with some of the best scholars and artists in the world. And we have a D1 school where we cheer on our football team and we make it to the national championship game in basketball. And we have a national champion meat judging team and a litigation team and the cheer and pom squad. You've seen us grow into that. You've seen us grow from a regional school to really a school on the national level. How do you see us? Where do you see us in the next 100 years? What's our next century bring?
Well, let me go backwards to come forwards. I have delighted in the growth of the school in all of the various departments, initiatives, the music department. My goodness, what a contribution it has made. Recently at the Buddy Holly Center for the Performing Arts, we had David Gashin back, and he sang a most beautiful concert with the symphony orchestra, and then acknowledged John and Mary Gillis as his mentors, as his part of Texas Tech. And of course, what a glorious evening that was.
You know that David Gashin, when they redid Phantom of the Opera here at Texas Tech, the person who played Christine was actually an Honors College student, Marissa Hernandez, who we just celebrated our May and August graduates. She came back to Texas Tech in order to sing a duet with one of our graduating seniors, Eric Bowie, in order to celebrate with our seniors who did not have the senior year that they expected to have, Marissa Hernandez Woman. And David has been a wonderful friend to Texas Tech and to the Honors College.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then also what I remember too is I helped to introduce soccer to Lubbock when I was at Christ the King between the church-related schools. We had a league. When I moved over to Tech, I was the coach player with the beginning soccer team, which blossomed in from the women especially. It was a wonderful program.
That's wonderful. So did you do a lot of headers? And,
oh,
and,
yes, yeah. Of course. You know, I continued to play soccer when Tony and I married, and I would come home crippled, you know. I played into my 50s, and she said, Tom, she said, don't you think you're a little old for that type of stuff? And then I went to see one of my friends in the orthopedics department. He says, Tom, do you think it's something got to do with, at your age, running sideways on an uneven surface playing soccer? But my memories of Tech tied in also with when we went through the name change, which was an interesting time.
Texas Technological College.
And then all the various names, and we had protests and march. You know, again, they were unhappy times when they, during the Vietnam War and the protests against the war, some involved in that too. And but all in all, it's been an alma mater to me. Think of Dave Vignes, Dr. David Vignes, who was chair of the history department.
And we still have a scholarship named after him in the history department. So
how interesting, yeah. I often think of the beginnings of the history department, and the Paul Wood was another dear friend who he taught military history. And
we still have the Wood Lecture as well for him. So, yes. If these Spanish Renaissance walls could talk, they have seen so much, right? They've seen the building of Lubbock. They've seen the Second World War. They have seen integration and civil rights. They have seen women's rights. They have seen, you know, the name change, the growth into, you know, a campus, one of the nine systems, right, that has a medical school, a law school, and a veterinary school.
I'd like to speak to that.
Because please.
We are one of the few with this. And also, we are a university without walls. We are interwoven. And were it not for Tech, and we reflected this when we did the 50-year history of the health sciences, which includes the medical school, were it not for the Texas Tech and Dr. Henry Schein and some of the early pioneers in the sciences, we would never have been awarded. We won the battle for the health sciences and for the medical school to begin with. But what a glorious, vibrant soul being the university community is for me and for others, and what a gift it has been to us.
So if these Spanish Renaissance walls could talk, what kind of trouble did Tom McGovern get into on Texas Tech campus?
I remember one evening being on top of the horse, you know, that.
You did not climb on top of the statue. You climbed on top of soap suds.
I had his picture taken on that.
Oh, if only this radio show also had video so that we could see the picture of young Tom McGovern on top of soap sud.
Of course, was ardent supporter of the football team, Spike Dykes, all along through all the various ups and downs and the wonders of it, and getting, you know, voraciously involved with Texas fans and with Aggie fans. What strikes me most of all, though, of course, Tony, my wife, has her degrees from Texas Tech, too, and I said to begin with, and I'll keep coming back to this, it's an alma mater that Texas Tech, the Texas Tech community, health sciences, and Texas Tech University, all part of the same wonderful family, that they have nurtured me and given me so much that anything that I've been able to do in return has been given to me a thousandfold before, ahead of time.
Well, in 2027, we will celebrate the first class of Texas Tech graduates, our centennial scholars who will be the 100th class that graduates from Texas Tech. If you could give that commencement address, what would be the one piece of advice you would give them for the next century?
Love your alma mater. Take the respect for humankind, for the human condition that you've learned in your various disciplines. And 100 years after, from you going onwards, that this world will be a better place. People will love, care, support each other, and be part of this great human adventure, this great human journey together.
And Tom McGovern is one of the greatest, kindest, most generous people that I have had the privilege and honor of knowing. So take it from him, live a kind and generous and spiritual life, and this university will live on in all of our hearts.
Thank you so much, Lisa, and I think that captures it. So you can take us out.
Thank you so much for joining us for Faith Matters, and it is my pleasure. This is Tom McGovern and Alisa Wong signing off.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.